This episode is brought to you through the support of our patrons over at patreon.com. You can go to patreon.com/notalonepodcast to learn how you can support your favorite show for as little as $1 a month. We truly can't overstate how important these donations are and how they truly keep the lights on month to month. Thank you so much to everyone who has donated. If you're interested in learning about other exclusive bonus content, things like getting the uncut version of the show early, as well as periodic bonus episodes released through that specific exclusive Patreon feed. Again, you can go to patreon.com/notalonepodcast. On with the show.
This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
Hello and welcome to the Not Alone Podcast. I'm Jason Moitoso.
And I'm Sam Fredrickson.
And welcome to another Jason special in our 50th episode.
50 freaking episodes.
50. We're getting there. We're closing in.
Closing into what?
To like a whole year.
Oh, that's true.
We're two episodes away. We're halfway to 100.
Well,
and I already feel that old.
I think technically... Next week. No, maybe. Yeah, next week's our 1 year.
Is it? Oh, yeah. Man.
But we skipped a week somewhere. So,
well, we skipped a week at the beginning. We started this thing on Valentine's?
We started it, I believe it's February 17th. I'll have to go back and look. But
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, we've got a few more days before we have to celebrate.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to do for that. I don't really care too much. Maybe I should. I care, but not enough to be like, oh, I'm going to plan something huge. Yeah. Real talk for a moment, Jason, before we start.
Go for it.
It's a Jason special today, which I'm excited for because I just get to sit here. That's nice. But real talk, Jason.
Yeah.
Did you think this would last this long? Did you think we'd make it to 50 episodes?
I expected us to go for like 3 months.
Really?
I expected a 3 month span, and then we would have covered everything in the paranormal, and we would have been done.
Oh, sweet baby child. That is definitely not the case.
That was my assumption.
Okay.
How about yourself, Sam?
I will say around like episode 20, 25, I was getting pretty fatigued about it. And I was like, what I was doing is I was checking the numbers every day, and I was working on this thing and that thing and trying to make it like profitable and this and that. And like when I did that, I just
stopped loving it.
Yeah, I just stopped loving it. And I did for a hot minute there. I was like, I'm not enjoying this. We should just shut it down. But then I saw something that Scott Philbrook from Astonishing Legends said when he was giving a speech at Podcast Movement. And he said something along the lines of like, you have to be in love with your subject. You have to be in love with what you're talking about. Otherwise, the show's going to fail.
I feel like it's a lot like teaching then.
Exactly.
In that regard.
Exactly. And so in that moment, I was like, wow, I really just let this get away from me. I've been focusing too much on this, that, and the other. And after that is when I really feel like we kind of hit our stride and we went better and more. But when I originally thought of this, I was like, yeah, we'll probably do it a few years. I was thinking maybe 2 or 3 years in total. But then that's where around episode 20, I was like, okay, shut it down. But now here we are. And I personally don't feel like stopping.
I love how you're telling me this now.
Yeah, Jason doesn't know anything about this internal struggle.
I had no idea.
We kind of mentioned it before. We talked about it once or twice before.
I didn't realize it was a bigger thing.
It was a bigger thing.
My bad, dude.
No, you're fine. I don't care. Once we bought the MacBook, I was like, all right, shut it down. I got a MacBook now. That's all I need. So, yeah.
Okay.
But I'm happy we're here. And, you know, like last podcast on the left, they just hit 300 episodes.
My
goodness. Maybe one day we'll be there. Maybe we won't. But right now we're at episode 50. And episode 50, is this our fourth or our fifth?
I want to say it's number five. Because we have Chupacabra, Sea Monsters,
Eclipse. Yeah, I always forget about the Eclipse.
Yeah, the Eclipse. And Dragons. Then we had Dragons. All right. And now we're on number five.
Jason Special number five. And what is it?
So I was thinking, because we were going so heavily in the UFO direction, that I want to do like unidentified submerged objects.
Mm-hmm. Which is a fascinating subject.
Sam thinks it's fascinating. I was about to say it's kind of boring. It's a lot of sounds. Whoop. That one in particular. Thank you. And then Sam last week just got so frustrated with swamp gas that I felt it was maybe time to talk a little bit deeper about swamps. And so today
we got to talk about them swamps.
I went deep into the bayou to pull out some fun stuff. And Sam, are you ready to start up the fan boat and grab your bug repellent?
Well, I'll tell you what, I am ready to go into the swamp.
Okay, so let's refrain from using that all the time.
I am ready to go into the swamp and to find me a gator and to wrestle it for the gift of eternal life. That is what I'm ready to do.
So there's a folklore that if you wrestle a gator, you get eternal life?
That's what I told myself in a dream I had once.
That's wonderful, Sam.
Also, we got...
Was it the same gator that ate the hand from Happy Gilmore?
You have to give... Happy Gilmore. I was going to go with Captain Hook. You have to give Captain Hook back his gator hand. Yes, it is. Also, just as a little side note, we got a beautiful review this week that was like, at first I thought that the banter, what did they say? They were like, the immature and childish banter I thought was only going to be constrained to one episode, and then I realized that it is a feature of the show.
I was like, right, you are, sir.
So there we go. It's a feature, not a bug. So, okay, we're going into the swamps. I'm not going to talk like Forrest Gump this whole episode.
Thank God.
I am ready to go into the swamps. Okay. And you know what? I think we should paddle faster. Because I hear banjos, so let's get going.
All right, so I'm going to start us off with something that, again, you had brought up last week during our last UFO episode, and that is swamp gas and will-o-wisps.
Nice.
Some very fun lights that have been recorded being seen on every continent besides for Antarctica, which that one's pretty self-explanatory.
They don't have fire down there.
They don't have land. They don't have marshes.
Well, that could
and
be
that's
it
the
too.
Key. The key is to have wetlands.
Okay. All right.
And luckily, everywhere else in the world, we have those.
All right.
And from there, it just comes down to the breaking down of plant matter to create methane that eventually gets lit somehow, some way, and we see some dancing lights in the night.
Okay.
Now,
all right.
Culturally, we've explained these away in quite a few different ways. In Europe and in most of the world, in one way or another, they're tied to spirits.
Okay.
Either unborn children that died and now are lost, floating around, trying to find heaven or hell.
Oh, man.
Right?
That's same. Sad.
There's a lot of stuck kind of in our world because they can't get to
can't
the
get
other
out. Mm.
Based off of the will-o-wisps. Another fun one that I actually really like is in Europe, we actually think of them more as treasure.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it reminds me a lot like video games where you have a little fairy kind of guiding you to your next destination.
Okay.
Kind of the same idea occurred with swamps in Northern Europe is that they were fairy lights that either guided you out to treasure or to your demise.
What's the physical... Why would treasure possibly...
What in your right mind makes you think, ooh, a swamp?
A swamp
must be buried over
well,
there.
Well, some of the world's greatest treasures have been buried in swamps. I can't recall any of them right now, but
like Luke Skywalker's X-wing.
Exactly. No, it's just so interesting to me that people therefore would have associated this material wealth, right, this gold and silver, would to such importance that spirits were trying to get at it.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, not just
them,
spirits, but also fairies.
Fairies, yes.
Fairies
well,
are the big
and they
one.
Do like treasure. That's true.
Mm-hmm. And just like luring people out to get treasure, jack-o'-lanterns, which are another interpretation of the will-o'-wisps.
I know what a jack-o'-lantern is.
I know you do.
I cut it out and I put it on my porch.
Right.
And then crappy little kids step on it.
And then we eagerly bring other people to our porch.
Ooh, in search of treasure. Treasure being candy.
Yeah, isn't that awesome?
I like that.
So, I had no idea.
So is at the original origin of it, is a jack-o'-lantern the same thing as a will-o'-the-wisp? Does Correct. It have a different sort of mythology, or it's just a different name
it's
for
the,
it?
It's the exact same. So the jack-o'-lantern is basically the same observation of what's going on in the swamps.
Okay.
But just has a different mythos behind it. Mm-hmm. And jack-o'-lanterns primarily are a European myth.
Okay. All right.
So we've tackled...
And where's will-o'-the-wisp? Is it also...
Same.
Okay. All yeah. Right.
So same ghostly spirits enticing you into the swamps, into the wilderness, to your demise most of the time.
All right.
I don't think there's ever been anyone that actually found treasure.
Really?
Yeah, unfortunately for all those fairies
if you
that were trying to guide them.
If you watch the movie Brave, she does find treasure, and the treasure that she finds is a good relationship with her mother, which is something that cannot
that's
be
wonderful.
Valued.
But that's not gold.
But also, her mom has to become a bear to get there.
Oh.
So.
For her to get there, or for...
For them both to get there. But primarily for Merida to get there.
Oh.
Brave is a great movie.
Brave's the only, like, one of the few that I haven't seen
it's
from
a
Pixar.
Good, it's a good movie.
Okay.
So if you want some more background information on Will-o'-the-Wisp, we're going to pause here for about an hour and a half. We're going to watch Brave, and then we're going to come back to it.
Sounds wonderful. Let's get to it.
All right. And we're back. Go ahead.
The magic of editing.
Yes.
Sorry, so I've focused primarily on will-o'-the-wisps and swamp gas igniting, primarily in Europe so far.
Okay.
But I do also want to talk a little bit more about Asia, because last week, again, I had spoken about a dragon that spat fire into the skies.
Yeah, yeah.
During
that
a celebration.
Pretty dope.
Well, I was a bit off.
Okay.
I went ahead and did a little bit more research, backtracked, and refreshed up on that. It's actually a giant river serpent.
Oh,
referred to
okay.
as the Naga.
Oh, okay.
Which is pretty sweet. And it shoots these fireballs into the sky on the Mekong River, which is in between Laos and Thailand.
Oh, okay.
To give you an idea. It's also a super big and vitally important river. It's about half a mile wide in most parts.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So it's a huge river.
That's gigantic.
It's essentially like the Nile of that area of the
okay.
world. But what's really awesome about this is that it only it occurs during the celebration of essentially like Buddha coming back to the world. And that takes place in October. Now, the fun part is that before actually Western culture got to it and investigated the lights, quote unquote, it was actually a pretty small festival. Now, we actually had a crew of people that went to discover what the fireballs were.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually took boats up the side of the river and found Laotian soldiers actually shooting off tracer rounds.
Oh, wow. But that couldn't be what had been happening forever.
Centuries before? No.
Yeah.
You're correct, yeah.
And just for our listeners who don't know, what's a tracer round?
A tracer round is essentially the round that gets shot that doesn't actually have a bullet, but it helps you guide the rest of your shots.
Yeah.
They are pretty common in like miniguns because you have no idea where anything's actually hitting, so the tracer round gives you an idea of where you're actually pointing at.
Nice. Yeah, I could see what people might think that's a dragon.
Right?
Or a sea serpent.
See, what I love about this is the fact that it's like it's two nations coming together for one celebration, really.
Uh-huh.
When you think about it. And the great news is that since that video took place, since that actually happened, that festival has grown exponentially and has brought in somewhere around $2.5 million to to that city that the main celebration gets held. And they've been able to ramp up from basic wooden chairs to actually like real bleachers and stuff like
nice.
That for those. And it's more than just one night, it's now a 4-day celebration. So it's actually pretty cool that even though their Naga was kind of killed off, in a sense. The celebration's gotten a lot bigger and is more impactful to that own community.
Okay.
Now, there's also another giant serpent all the way across the other side of the world. In Brazil, the will-o'-wisps, the swamp gas igniting, has been explained away by a giant serpent that comes out and eats corpses and other prey, devouring their eyes specifically. Mm. which I always think is kind of interesting because usually eyes are the first things that get eaten when, you know, a prey item gets taken down.
Yes.
So if you're stumbling upon a corpse that is only missing eyes or maybe a little bit of soft tissue like gut is also gone, you can maybe explain it away from this giant serpent. And because it eats eyes, that's why its own eyes glow fiery red from the Will of Wisps, essentially, which is pretty cool.
That is dope.
But does not spit fire. It's just its eyes that glow that way.
If I eat your eyes, will you not get
fiery eyes. No.
Damn.
No. Are you a giant serpent from Brazil?
These are the questions we need to ask ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm seeing four limbs and no tail. That's so true. I'm going to go with no, Sam. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry that I lied to you all.
Observational bias.
I am not a giant Brazilian serpent. As I have claimed to have been.
Mere seconds ago. Debunked.
Solved. All right.
In Mexico, Will of Wisps are also explained away by brujas, which are just essentially witches that can transform into these balls of fire. Now, there's a couple different mythologies of why they do this, but it's pretty clear that it's been a concept that has retained its value throughout that culture. So, for the most part, Will of Wisps have been essentially spirits.
Mm-hmm.
They've been guiding lights, and they are always happening in marshes and swamplands.
Okay, and they're prolific. They're all over.
Yeah,
every place has their own thing.
It's a common occurrence throughout the world. Now, it wasn't until It wasn't until 1776 that an Italian scientist, Alessandro Volta, discovered methane. And he blamed will-o'-wisps to this phenomenon of just the, again, decaying vegetation that may have been sparked by lightning is what he had first assumed. And that was actually held in high regards for quite a long time. And then in the early 2000s, scientists were actually able to create spontaneous combustion of that methane under very specific circumstances.
Oh, interesting. So that wasn't... It wasn't until the early 2000s that we actually recreated it.
Yeah, and honestly, wow. I think probably the biggest issue is probably no one cares enough to put funding into that versus everything else we have going on in the world.
I remember, right, when we were doing our UFO episodes, one of the biggest things and one of the biggest reasons that J. Allen Hynek got so much crap for the swamp gas is that in addition to it not looking anything like a UFO, at that point, they still didn't know, like, it wasn't conceivable that it would actually just spontaneously explode.
Right.
And so people gave him a lot of crap for that.
Totally.
So that's interesting that it wasn't until early 2000s that they found that spontaneous combustion.
Well, it comes with a catch.
Okay.
So the catch is we have to have, of course, methane, which is pretty prolific in marshes. We understand that now. But we also have a very specific concentration of oxygen, which is pretty high.
Okay.
And then we need a phosphorus compound as well to essentially be our catalyst for the ignition. Now, say all that goes perfectly well, and it happens. That being said, this exact equation that we need doesn't happen frequently or easily, I should say, in the natural world. This was under very specific circumstances in a test location. But the catch is that when that happens, the flame burns out incredibly quickly, and it's usually a bluish-green tone as well. And it leaves a big puff of black smoke after it's burnt.
And that's one thing that distinctifies the will-o'-wisps
It's a normal red glow or yellow. It's not this weird,
it's a supernatural
cool color.
Or at least appearingly a supernatural color.
Right, which is completely off-key. That, and it doesn't linger. It's a very, very quick process of combustion. It doesn't go for a long time. Again, same thing with the Mekong's Naga. Mm. Is those balls of fire were originally understood to have been actual balls of fire that did fly through the sky and didn't just disperse immediately. So we don't necessarily know exactly how the methane combusts properly in order to get the right circumstances where everything lines up to what we have in mythos. That being said as well, is that we have other ideas that maybe it's just people's eyes, because let's be honest here, our night vision as humans is not fantastic. What usually happens is that our eyes will dilate so that we can increase more light, but we don't have as good with color. So we don't have as good vision at night with color. And so maybe that bluish green tone was actually misidentified, or, and this is the one that I like a little bit better, is that it could be just weird light reflection off the belly of an owl flying through the night as well. That also explains why it would maybe fly away from us as we get closer to it. Now, that being said, swamps in general are spooky places.
That's true.
They've always been spooky.
That's true.
I think in pop culture, like when we look back at it, if there is one place in the world that I don't really want to spend much time with, it's probably a swamp.
It's a swamp.
Because the first thing I think of are crocodiles, big old insects, and snakes. Like, what in my right mind would want me to go out there, right?
That's fair.
So when we look back as well, the wilderness that surrounds us has always been this great big enemy.
Mm.
It's always been sort of the boogeyman that we have sought to escape from. In civilizations past, as in the Greek cultures, they built tremendous cities and were incredibly fearful of the wilderness. For them,
and rightfully so, man. Those guys couldn't. I mean, they had some weapons and obviously a ability to protect themselves, but people got wrecked all the time out in the wilds.
Oh yeah, of course. But for the Greeks, the wilderness was the home of the gods. It was not to be trifled with. And a lot of their myths actually come from humans interfering with the gods and thus being punished for it. And I think along with the Greeks and German culture, the forests, the wilderness around us really becomes, again, like this boogeyman of a feeling to where it is the darkest parts of us in a lot of ways.
And it's such a mystical place. I mean, you think about Aesop's Fables, Grimm Fairy Tales, all of these different things where the majority, well, I'm not going to say the majority, but the most memorable things don't happen in the city in the daylight. They happen in the woods at night. Yeah.
They happen where anything is possible out in the wilderness, where uncharted lands could mean profit or it can be your utter demise. Same thing with the Celtics up north in Ireland. We actually were able to, thanks to thanks to Christian monks, they actually were able to save a lot of Celtic information because unfortunately, up until that point in time, Celtic druids did not actually write any information about their culture down or their religion down.
Interesting.
And Rome has this idea of global expansion that kind of hindered the Celtics to really do very much besides for live in Britannia, in Ireland, and northern France. But thankfully, monks were able to actually write down some lore and culture from Ireland that go and talk about what the wilderness meant to them. And the wilderness for Celtics, or the Celts, was essentially a realm that you could accidentally slip into another dimension with. It was a place where you can get lost into a completely different world. And once you made it back home, it could be days, months, decades later, and your family has all but forgotten you. It's the world of extreme bliss and happiness, but it actually has its own demises, its own terrors as well. It just looks really happy and nice from the outside world.
And remember, don't eat the food. Don't eat the food.
Never eat the food?
Never eat the food.
Why is that?
Well, we talked about it last time. Whenever you go into this different world sort of scenario or you know, you're on the in the fairy world or in the wilderness or anything like that, and suddenly you come up upon a table or even just a plate in the wilderness and it has this delicious looking food prepared on it, and how did it get there and this and that. If you eat the food, you're screwed. You're trapped. So just a reminder, everyone.
Don't eat the food if you slip into the fairy realm.
Don't eat the food if you don't know. And this is also just a good thing for
just
survival.
Just don't eat weird food.
If you don't know where it came from, don't eat the food.
That's a
good.
Hansel and Gretel should have known that.
Yeah, exactly.
They knew where the food came from, and it still didn't help them out.
That's true. That's true.
So going back at it, ancient cultures were fearful of the wilderness because it was the exact opposite of what they were able to control. It was wild.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the god Pan is directly where we get the word panic from.
Ooh.
There right? You go. Crazy.
Some etymology yeah, for
there
you.
We go. And so if we bring it up to today, I still think the swamps, the bogs, the marshes are still that most wild part of landscapes that we can see. I'm not afraid of mountains myself. I've gone hiking. I ski. This isn't a big deal for me. Neither are lakes or rivers, usually. But swamps are something
still
else.
Still don't want to go in the swamp.
And swamps have always been that way. And they got a resurgence in the mid, into the mid 20th century. For example, the classic swamp monster that we think of today most of the time was started in 1940s with the Hillman publication of The Heap, which is a plant-based swamp monster.
Mm.
It's actually a comic book series. And then shortly after that, both DC and Marvel ripped it off with the Swamp Thing and Man Thing, respectively, in a short time after that. You're welcome, Randall.
There you go. Randall with the comic books.
You got it. There, that one's for you.
And we're gonna, I'm sure that Jason has a whole lot more. You got a whole lot more to say about swamp things and
you have no idea.
Creatures and mystery and terror. But before we do, before we get to that, we do need to take a brief break for this week's sponsor. So we're gonna be right back.
Sam, just how like we tackle the paranormal and the mystery that surrounds our world, there's another podcast that you recently found that does a little bit more of the crime aspect of it, right? A little bit more of the edgier?
The real world mystery, I would say. More okay. than, not to say there's not a good amount of the paranormal and the supernatural, but, you know, this show, Conspiracy Theories, this show covers topics in the real physical realm. Whereas we cover a lot of stuff in the more metaphysical realm. You know, it's about getting to the bottom of events that happened, that we know happened. Things like Roswell, things like Princess Diane, all these different things that over the years have had conspiracy theories built up around them. And the thing I really enjoy about this show is it's very akin to Not Alone, in that in each episode of Conspiracy Theories, they're going to give you the official version. They're going to tell you what you're supposed to believe. They're going to tell you what their team of researchers has found in regards to what you're supposed to believe. They're going to tell you what they believe. And then at the end of the day, they're going to leave it up to you.
So fantastic. They allow someone like me that doesn't know much about conspiracy theories, which I've been harping on you to try to teach me a few things, but allows me to understand what they're talking about and actually make my own opinion.
Exactly. Exactly. And the storytelling is, there's no word for it other than captivating. It's like you're experiencing it for the first time. The drama of every situation that they cover, all of it creates this complex and really deep conversation about what's actually going on in the world. But what they do best is that they do that in a way that does not intimidate the newcomer. You know, you, Jason, you don't know the jargon. You don't know the slang. You don't know the dates and the events and the people and the, you know, if I say the Bohemian Grove to you,
I think Bohemian Rhapsody.
See, it nothing. But these people are doing their best and doing it quite well in explaining without this jargon and without just dropping things you're supposed to understand. It truly is a way. If you've ever been interested in conspiracy theories, it's a way to get started. It's a way to learn. But also, if you've been interested and you've been around them for a long time, they're bringing out, you know, new information, things that are so often skipped over, and really giving each subject that they cover the full treatment.
So if you're just now venturing into the category, or if you're a seasoned expert, you might be able to find something new, and we highly recommend this podcast. Sam, where can that be found?
You can find it. You can visit, you know, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, really anywhere you listen to podcasts. You just search for Conspiracy Theories. Now that's CONSPI. RACY space THEORIES conspiracy theories, Or because it's a part of the Paracast Network, you can go to paracast.com/conspiracy. That's Paracast, PARCAST.com/conspiracy to listen. Now, the nice thing about it, guys, is it's just starting. I think they're at 5 or 6 episodes. The episodes come out every Wednesday. Jump in now. You know, don't let that back catalog build too big. You're going to be able to learn about things like Roswell, Diana right off the bat, like we mentioned, and then we're going to move deeper. Things like the Illuminati, secret societies.
You can catch them on Wednesday, yes. And then get us on Thursday.
On Thursday. Add it to your lineup. Subscribe to it. It is a fantastic show, and we know you're going to love it.
Yep. So jump into conspiracy theories. Take a look at what they do. And now back to what we have for you.
All right. Back to the show.
And then about 14 years after comic books started creating swamp monsters, we got, of course, the iconic 1954 film, The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yes, Black Lagoon.
Which is a movie that I've actually never seen, but whenever I think of a swamp monster, I literally think back to, like, those posters that I've seen.
Yeah, you know? That's it.
It's like the quintessential swamp monster. It is. It's perfect in every way. It's not, you know, densely vegetation, which is one thing,
mm-hmm.
but it is so iconic. And that is actually referred to as the Gill Man.
The Gill
it's
Man.
It's a humanoid, half man, half fish thing. That's pretty sweet.
Are you sure you're not talking about The Shape of Water?
The Shape of Water. The new Gill Man. That's literally it.
A newer, sexier Gill Man. Brought to you by Guillermo del Toro. Stop. Oh, gosh. That's such a strange movie. And anyway, actually, moving on.
I just realized that Kim Possible ripped off The Creature from Black Lagoon real bad. Did you ever see that episode where they had literally the swimmer Gill?
Yeah.
That took a radioactive bath and then became
they were like a
the
summer
Gill
camp
man?
Or something. Yeah. Yeah.
One of my favorite episodes.
That's a good episode.
So, see, it's just the same story.
Was that an episode
retold.
Or was that a movie?
I want to say it's an episode. I don't think it was a movie.
All right.
So, we've had this idea of a humanoid swamp monster for quite a long time, and it's a common theme that keeps coming up and keeps going back. Now, one thing that I found extremely interesting is that before 1987, a lot of scientists had this idea that intelligence was based off of some animal's body posture. For a long time, everyone assumed that intelligence was directly related to walking on two legs and having an erect posture. It wasn't until 1987 and H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds that we got...
1897.
1897. Yeah. Thank you.
You're good.
Numbers. It wasn't until 1897's H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds that we actually got the idea of intelligence not being directly correlated with the type of body you have, with the Martians that came in and invaded and eventually died.
Yeah, they were like weren't they like a
squid-like.
Tentacle?
Yeah, they're squid-like. They actually had kind of humanoid-esque faces, but body plan, completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And that got the scientific community kind of up in a jar. It got the idea that not necessarily having a humanoid body possibly means that you could be intelligent.
Okay.
But for a long time, because we are humans and this is what we do, we always put a human aspect to everything that we criticize. This kind of continuation of that play has created our swamp monsters being humanoid.
Mm-hmm.
And continuously throughout the mid-20th century, we keep getting swamp monsters that are still humanoid.
Mm-hmm.
In 1988, a 7-foot-tall human-like lizard creature was spotted in the Bishopville Scape Ore Swamp in South Carolina. And it was on a pretty sweet little spree for a few days that essentially it was this giant creature that terrorized people.
Okay.
No one got hurt.
That's good.
And then it kind of faded away into non-existence again.
Yeah, and you have other things. You have like the Loveland Frogman, which is literally a frog that walks like a man. Other things like that.
I've seen that cartoon.
No.
The Dancing Frog.
This one was real, though.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Well, I'm sure we'll cover... We haven't actually done a swamp monster ever. I'm sure we'll cover one fairly soon.
Yeah.
Because I have no idea what we're talking about next week, but we'll figure it out. But yeah, it's interesting to see that these things can't just be relegated to the realm of fiction, that whether there's something physical or whether it's all just deep buried in our psyche... that the swamp is a place of monsters in the real world as well as in Hollywood and ancient myth.
Exactly. Now, if we keep looking at this lizard man, some key characteristics came up. It did have a tail. Okay. And again, it was a giant lizard-like creature. It had bright red eyes. Well, from my background knowledge, I also know that owls have pretty red luminescent eyes, and owls tend to frequent swamp-like areas. But if we do just play along for a moment here.
All right.
We also know of a lizard that gets that big and bigger. The Komodo dragon gets up to 10 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy to pass off as being a creature of this size. Now, the catch is that Komodo dragons are a part of a family called monitor lizards. They're the largest species of lizards that we currently have. And unfortunately, those lizards don't show the ability to really stand up on their hind legs or move through their hind legs. Small lizards can. For example, my bearded dragon, Rocco, they have been known to run on their hind legs. There's also the basilisk lizard that gets the nickname the Jesus Christ lizard because it can run on water on its hind legs. So it's not necessarily impossible that a lizard can't prop itself onto its hind legs, but very improbable,
mm-hmm.
especially for a lizard this size. That is a lot of body weight to put on two legs mm-hmm. when they have been adapted and very, very designed for the four-leg locomotion.
Yeah, and they're very short little stubby
yeah,
little
they,
legs.
Yeah, they aren't
too.
They aren't really long legs to mm-hmm. get you moving.
Not like the Wolfman.
No, of course. Leaps and bounds ahead, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean.
There you go.
And of course, we have another swamp monster that pops up in the Florida Everglades the most, but has also been seen in many states in the southern U.S. Sorry, I stumbled there.
You're okay.
In the southern U.S. And that is, of course, the skunk ape.
Ah, yes.
Also reared its head in the mid-1800s or 1900s. Mm-hmm. There's been a couple different renditions of this kind of being. There was another one in Louisiana that essentially was this weird crocodile man thing that was only seen once and found some prints. But I wanted to take a closer look about skunk apes.
Okay.
About the idea behind it. Because for my knowledge, I've never really seen or heard of a primate or an ape, a great ape, living in a marshland environment.
Right.
So because when I think of great apes, I'm thinking orangutans, I'm thinking gorillas, chimpanzees, I'm thinking deep forest-dwelling creatures. I didn't really know of anything that came from a marsh.
And it should be noted that the skunk ape is essentially, in its own way, a Sasquatch-like creature, but it's this differentiation of environment, right? Sasquatch yeah. is woods and mountains, and this is marshes. So, I dig.
Correct. So
everything that Jason's about to say is actually a knock against Sasquatch, which means I'm going to shut down for a little while. Go ahead.
Oreos, Sam. What about Oreos?
Oreos.
Am I bringing it back?
I do love Oreos. Go ahead.
Because guess what? Oreopithecus was actually discovered in also the 19th or the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And Oreopithecus was actually a very, very specialized ape.
Mm-hmm.
It lived in the Miocene epoch, which was 9 to 7 million years ago in essentially Tuscany or okay. Tuscan, Italy, which is what we think of now. During that time period, though, Italy wasn't the boot. Italy was right. actually a chain of islands that stretched from Europe to Northern Africa. And because of that, it was mostly dominated with marshlands.
Mm.
Now, the fun thing about Oreopithecus is that we actually realized, based off of carbon tooth analysis, that it was marshland that it primarily lived in, which is actually a really cool system. Essentially, it takes how much carbon is from plant matter and oxygen to figure out exactly what kind of biome the creature lived in. We can do this with pretty much any teeth, which is pretty sweet. But we did that for Oreopithecus, and I'm going to bring that up again a little bit later on in the show. Well, Oreopithecus, again, lived in a marshland. Now, mm-hmm. what made him really interesting is that it was actually very much able to stand on two legs.
Mm-hmm.
Its feet were actually designed in such a way that it created more like a tripodal stance. Its feet were actually kind of spread out slightly. When I think of that, I think more of like a duck's foot.
Okay.
It gave it more stability. Now, the catch with Oreopithecus is that it wasn't very big.
Mm.
It got up to maybe like 77 pounds. Like that is the biggest estimate that we have for them. Otherwise, 35 kilograms for everyone else in the world, besides for good old America. Which is unfortunate because once Italy did kind of connect to the mainland, it got eaten pretty mm-hmm. quickly.
Yeah, that's a pretty, as far as great apes go, that's pretty small, isn't it?
It is. It's yeah. pretty darn small. And the catch is that it was specifically designed for low energy locomotion.
Mm-hmm.
It evolved into a location that did not have any predators for it to really contend with or worry about, so it did not matter.
Do we know how tall it would stand?
I'd probably assume at 77 pounds, probably the 4 foot mark.
Okay.
Is what my assumption would be.
All right.
I didn't know. I didn't find that exactly.
Yeah.
I was looking for that too. But 77 pounds is what they estimated as far as body size goes. Are you looking for it now? Go for
yes.
it. Yes. I'm assuming it's probably around that 4 foot mark.
Let's see. Oreo picking. Boy, come on now. My God, why? Just trying to find it. Yeah, I don't know.
Cool.
There's no... As far... And granted, this is a 35-second long Google search.
Of course.
But I can't find it, so...
Not a problem.
I'm going to say 4 foot works.
Yeah. So, thankfully, and you just said that a little earlier, convergent evolution means that, technically, if we put an ape in a marsh, it mm-hmm. could evolve to live in that environment.
Mm.
Now, we just gotta fix the size problem.
Right.
Because, from what I have really found, skunk apes are bigger creatures than 77 pounds.
Right.
A little bit more terrifying, intimidating. So, of course, that turns us to Gigantopithecus.
Ah, oh, yes.
The closest relative that it has... today is the orangutan.
Yes.
But this was an ape that got up to 1,100 pounds. It is the biggest ape that we are aware of,
mm-hmm.
But it died out before, I guess, in the very early of the last ice age.
Okay.
Now,
so the Jungle Book is probably not a real account.
No, sir.
Okay.
That's probably not quite the truth of the matter. Unfortunately, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
So, anyway, Gigantopithecus was actually discovered by its teeth. It had very specific molars that were found in a Chinese medicine shop, which was really crazy because all we've actually found of this creature has been teeth and a jawbone. We haven't found too much more.
Mm.
But because of the size of the teeth and the exact dimensions and the tooth itself, we realize that it is closely related to orangutans. So that's how we have our very basic knowledge of it.
Okay.
Also, we did, again, that same carbon figuring with the vegetation, and it lived in incredibly dense forest areas. We also discovered other animals that lived during that time period as well and found their teeth to have a little bit different carbon, showing that it was probably dense forest splashed with highland grasslands mm-hmm. in between there. Now, unfortunately, it's theorized that Gigantopithecus died out because of the ice age and the change in climate that eventually just made it so that its environment got too small to support such a big creature, which is unfortunate.
That is unfortunate.
Yeah.
I'd love to see an 1,100-pound monkey.
Right?
It'd be crazy.
It's an ape. It's not a monkey. All right? They're different, Sam.
What is the difference?
What is... Tails, Sam. Tails.
Okay, tails.
Yeah.
That's the only difference.
That's the main difference, yeah. That's
the main difference. Okay. All right.
Ain't got no tails.
Gigantopithecus.
Gigantopithecus. Got no tail.
All right.
Big old boy.
I will not refer to him as a monkey again.
Thank you.
I apologize.
But
send my regards.
We can talk about monkeys because there have been monkeys in the New World. And we've known that. Of course, there are monkeys down in South America.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also been monkeys discovered as far as Alaska.
Really?
Yes.
I don't think a monkey's being in Alaska.
Right? Not today. But go back almost 60 million years ago during the Eocene epoch, which was 56 to 33.9 million years ago, monkeys were found actually pretty fluently, or pretty, not fluently. What is that? That's not a word.
What is fluition?
I don't know. Monkeys were found prominently all over North America because most of the world was actually filled with rainforests. It wasn't until the Great Break.
Nice.
Which is what we're taking now.
Nice.
I'm kidding. So the Great Break was actually a mass extinction and change of climate is called, or I guess what scientists call a mass extinction and change in climate. What happened was a passageway between Antarctica and South America broke away and collapsed. That was called the Drake Passage. When it collapse, what happened is he had a lot of cold water from the Pacific Ocean meet the Atlantic Ocean.
Okay.
This now connected the two oceans together and allowed for cold water to flow globally.
Oh.
And that caused a cooling of the entire Earth.
Wow.
Which then created a mass extinction. Oh, man. And now we don't have monkeys.
So did this big old thing, did it fall all at once?
I'm assuming it's probably just eroded away over time.
Eroded over time. And then suddenly you have just more and more. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Now, a cool thing, though, is that these monkeys that did make it to North America did so without having Panama. North and South America weren't connected at the time.
Really?
So the best way that we can explain it is that we think they rafted here.
All right.
On
now,
vegetation.
All right, now. Okay. You're going to tell me.
Yeah.
You're going to tell me that Sasquatch can't happen, and yet a monkey can build a raft.
No, no, not like an actual raft, but floating bits of vegetation.
Essentially,
Sam.
A raft.
Essentially a raft.
How far, do you know how far this distance was that they rafted?
No idea.
Because if it's like 500 feet, okay, so be it. It's 500 feet.
Eventually, but it probably like, came to that.
Right, but if it's like miles and miles and miles, I know I'm not a scientist, but the idea of a monkey rafting is not only adorable.
Isn't it?
It also just does not jive with me. I'm sorry.
Right?
Dang.
I get it.
All right. Okay.
So now it begs the question that if South America has had monkeys and primates for all this time, why doesn't South America have any great apes? Why don't the Americas get involved in this?
Okay.
I think it really comes down to a couple different things. One, there wasn't really much of a need to do so. I don't think primates became terrestrial for any real reason. There wouldn't be much of a point if you can just stay in the trees. That, and one other thing, predators.
Okay.
One of my favorite predators of all time, the terror bird.
Nice.
The terror bird was the biggest predator of South America, and there's several different species of them, but I believe the biggest got up to like 7 feet tall, and it's essentially a dinosaur.
Wow.
It's this giant bird that was the king of the hill, essentially, until Panama happened.
Yes.
So that's the great thing about species meeting each other.
Yeah.
Is that once North and South America connected, there's a mingling. Terror birds have been found all the way up into Texas, which is really, really cool. But this also allowed things like giant ground sloths, saber-toothed cats, to make their way down into South America, which means that terror birds, and which is really, again, the only large predator that South America had at the time, now has a lot of competition between saber-toothed cats and some of the other predators, like the short-faced bear, which is what we had previously. Also, one of my favorite prehistoric creatures.
That's adorable.
Very cool. It's a short-faced bear. It's a short-faced bear. It is huge.
Okay.
They're like 9 feet at shoulder. They're huge.
Wow.
Gigantic bears.
I'm trying to imagine it standing up in
my house.
So
not only did we have the issue of terror birds, but later on, once North and South America did merge, we had much larger predators and more predators to hunt at ground level.
Okay.
So I just don't think primates really made much of an impact to get up here. Yeah. That and coming out of the last ice age, megafauna just started to slowly die off anyway. A lot of people thought for a long time that humans getting to North America is what caused most of the extinction of megafauna, like mastodons. But in reality, we found a, we did a couple dig sites in northeastern U.S. and also in Canada on that side, mm-hmm. so Maine, essentially, that area, where humans had not really gone to for, it would take a few more centuries to do that. And we have signs that those megafauna mastodons were dying out anyway. Mm-hmm. So they're already on their way out as humans were coming and populating mm-hmm. North America.
Interesting.
So we just weren't able to support big creatures any longer.
Yeah.
So with that combination, I don't yet believe that there is a giant ape living in our swamps.
So what do you think could explain skunk ape? What's a good explanation for skunk ape?
I think skunk ape, and also most swamp monsters are truly a personification of the darkness that lives within us and our fears.
Right. Okay.
And misidentification of scary things in the dark.
Right. So that's the bigger question. What's being misidentified? If you say a bear, I'm going to punch you in the mouth.
Well, we're far away and you can't reach me.
That's fair.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was.
If it was a bear.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know nearly enough about skunk ape individually and particularly. I've never looked up any of the reports about it or any sightings or anything like that. So I can't speak too much for it, but yeah, could be a bear.
Yeah. At this point in time, I can't really say that it's probable.
Right.
But thanks to Oreopithecus, it's possible.
Right. Well,
the unfortunate thing is that the Earth has just been in a constant change of climate for the past 12,000 years, mm-hmm. that we don't really have the time to evolve for a creature to evolve to fit that kind of niche.
Mm. All right. I dig it. No, whatever.
I cut you off. So
I can't remember what I was going to say. So it's fine. That's totally good. That's totally okay. I still have that Sasquatch book that I still have not had time to read, but it's chock full of science.
Good.
And one day I'm going to read it. And one day I'm going to be able to refute your claims that there is no Sasquatch.
I can't wait, Sam.
Good.
I really can't. So, as we take a moment,
mm-hmm.
Sam, how do you feel about swamps now?
Swamps have always been interesting because I don't like my feet being wet.
Right?
And I feel like that's all a swamp is. Is your socks being wet all the time. It is all
wet.
But on the other side of things, you look at people living in the bayou and footage of that and people on those big old boats with the fan boat. Yeah. And it just seems like such an interesting environment to the point where I'm sure that you do. I'm sure that you step into a swamp or you're boating through the swamp. And I mean, for myself personally, I just noticed last night, so I take out Baron every night.
Every evening,
For his like midnight walk. And I always have headphones on. But last night, I left him inside or anything like that. And as I'm walking down the street, I'm just getting spooked left and right. I'm like hearing things move and stuff like that. And I'm like expecting a wolf man or something like that to jump out at me. That's on the street.
And that's in the middle of Boise,
Idaho. Yeah, that's in the middle of the city on the street. And it's like... And I'm sure I'm not the only person who kind of is on high alert at that point of night, regardless of where you are. So it is. It's something that is more than easy for me to believe that if you're in that naturally spooky environment and you do see anything, whether it's a bear, I'm not going to say an owl. I refuse to say an owl. But if it's a bear or something else like that, I could definitely see it becoming a monster, you know, in your mind.
Yeah, it just takes, you know, a bear that got covered in moss or something right. to where it becomes the swamp thing.
Unidentifiable swamp thing. You know, at the end of the day, I'd love to go see the Everglades. I'd love to try a swamp out, but they're spooky places. And they're spooky places because...
They are dangerous and
because
unknown.
They are dangerous, but because they've always been that way. And so you just get this idea of... You know, why are they that way? But you juxtapose that with the fact that it is. It's full of death, even just vegetable death, and it's mm-hmm. a natural thing. One interesting thing that we didn't necessarily mention, this is just about swamp gas in general, one other big place that it occurs is actually not just swamps, but graveyards because of
decomposition of bodies.
And so you have a phenomena very much like the Will of the Wisp and the Jack-o'-lantern, referred to as ghost lights, where people will see lights in graveyards and boom, it's a ghost. Of course it is. And it is. It's the same sort of thing. Swamp is freaky. Graveyard is freaky.
Yeah, therefore, you automatically
has monsters,
think
graveyard has monsters.
You're already on edge. Yeah. The hairs on the back of your neck are primed. They're ready to go, man.
Yes. And to learn more about swamps, you can watch, this is from my wife who just texted it to me. You can watch last week's episode of The Bachelor, in which Tia, who is one of the bachelorettes, and Ari, who is the bachelor, they go on a swamp date. I don't know what that entails.
I hope it's a fan boat.
I'm sure it's something great. So
yes,
it's a fan boat.
Fan boat and Cajun cooking is what I'm keeping my fingers crossed for. That sounds amazing.
There it is.
If anyone wants to invite me to Louisiana.
Louisiana. no, but I mean, overall, I think it's just one of those natural things. People are going to be freaked out by swamps until there are no more people or no more swamps.
So. Yeah, which unfortunately, it's becoming closer and closer to no more swamps. Mm-hmm. We've been doing a lot of reclamation for turning swamps into farmland. That's pretty much what happened in Britain for the most part. And I think absolutely, nail on the hammer there. Swamps are spooky. They are a spooky setting for us. They are very, very strange to us. We like to have grass fields. We like to have farms. We like things that we can see. And I think the fact that swamps are just literally just water and vegetation.
Well, they're
denseness.
Truly amphibious. They're two different worlds mixing in a way that they shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
That feels to us like they shouldn't. And also, that's where people dump dead bodies, I'm pretty sure.
I would not be surprised. And because of that, they are the perfect scene for our ghost stories. They are the perfect boogeyman, and they will continue to be that for us, which is what I am most excited about. Even though wetlands, swamps, they have some of the most diverse biomes of the world. They're incredibly full of life, but to us, they are this surreal. They are the undead, not necessarily new life. They're completely different.
You gonna say this line, or you want me to read this line? Because I'm gonna read this line is getting said one way or the other.
Go for it, Sam.
Jason finished his notes with what I think may be the greatest thing he's ever written, and it says, "Evolution takes time, but our imaginations run wild. Run wild." The swamp is home to many species, including our fears and the dark parts of ourselves. Swamp thing. Yeah, dude, and no. It's good.
That's it, man. That's my idea on swamps. I took a lot of information from Eons had a great little video on YouTube that kind of goes over Gigantopithecus and what happened to it. That also, if you are more interested of how we figure out the vegetation based off of teeth, check out that video on YouTube. It takes it's like a 10-minute video. It's really sweet.
That is interesting that we can even do
that. So cool, man.
It's very strange.
It's the deposits that get placed on our teeth from eating stuff. I don't even want to know what mine's like.
Yeah.
So mine, there you have it, Sam.
Mine would be that I ate a pound of pasta in the last 24 hours. So.
What kind of carbon is in pasta?
Oh, speaking really quickly about pasta, we had a very helpful message from an individual who lives in Pascagoula, Mississippi, as you'll remember from last week's episode when we talked about it being a delicious kind of cheesy pasta. Unfortunately, there is no good pasta in Pascagoula, Mississippi. So
dang it.
I know. It's sad.
Darn it.
It's sad. But
hey, there's an opening there. You can fill a niche.
You can fill it. Bring us the pasta.
So, Sam.
Good.
There it is.
Jason's
special swamps. Number 5. Hot and fresh out the kitchen.
There you go. You had to say it. You always have to say it. It's the
swamp
fever,
baby.
Swamp fever, the disease that's taking the world by storm. That's actually going to be the title of this episode.
Swamp fever?
Swamp fever.
Love it.
Not as bad as it sounds. Yeah, dude, no, I thought that was great. I really like this one. I really like the mythology blending with the reality of the situation and the science, which of course is what our listeners love about you, is the science and what some other people don't like about you.
That's fine. I'm okay with people liking me and some people not.
I don't understand how you could, because I want everyone to like me all the time. Anyway, no, I thought that was very good. Do you have any last closing remarks, any last thoughts on swamps or anything else?
Not particularly. I still don't want to really go to one unless I am on a fan boat. I'm totally cool with that. Why? Snakes still scare me.
That's fair.
Snakes are scary.
That's fair.
Also, I don't know, if for some reason some other apocalypse happens, there's one creature I know that will still be around, which is a crocodile.
They just don't die.
They are never going to leave us. So get used to them, I guess, is my biggest takeaway.
We must learn to peacefully cohabitate with the crocodiles.
Yeah, man. Otherwise, they're going to get you.
All right.
You're going to be sunbathing on a riverside, and then you're just going to get snapped.
Oh, no.
How they do it. They're ambush predators.
Okay.
They have short little legs.
Do you want to talk about crocodiles? You can talk. Go ahead.
There was a species of crocodiles that used to gallop. They had long legs. Yeah, they had long legs. God. There was another one that was kind of like armadillo-like. They actually had bigger scales that was like literally plating on their backs as well. Crocodiles have done a lot of crazy stuff. I think
about when you talk about a galloping crocodile.
Nothing good.
It literally...
That would be the closest thing to a crocodile swamp monster.
I'm sure that this is not how it was, or at least I hope it's not how it was.
A monkey is riding it.
Well, that's fair. No, it's like a crocodile, but with the legs of a horse, and it scares me.
Yeah, no, I'm just talking about long legs.
Yeah.
Yeah, just long legs in general.
Very long legs, because it's a crocodile horse. Okay.
So I think my biggest takeaway from this, at least, has been... Investigate our surroundings, man. You know, the wild isn't really as wild as what we think it is, and that's important.
That is important.
But we also don't capture that, you know,
we don't need to drain the swamp, because the swamp is beautiful.
Yeah, if we drain the swamp, then we just kill entire ecosystems, and that's not so great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a political commentary. I'm literally talking about real swamps right now.
Yeah, let's not reclaim that land.
Yeah,
let's keep them alive.
Swampy.
Mm-hmm.
We are eventually going to do, I'm pretty sure, a swamp, a specific swamp, down in the bayou that has like a voodoo queen and werewolves Very and stuff. Sweet. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, dude, I thought that was good. Good episode. Good Jason special.
Do you have any questions for me?
No, you covered it, man.
Yeah,
I can't think of anything.
You feel better about swamps?
No. No, absolutely okay. Not.
See, that's the thing, man. That's the thing about swamps for me. They're dark, and like I don't know things. Like that's the thing. Underwater, I don't know what's down there.
Exactly.
That's terrifying.
And you know, we've been doing this.
I think that like talks to most people.
Yeah, we've been doing this show for pretty damn near a year now, to the point where you know about me that you like to sit there and say like, oh, the reason people think swamps are spooky is XYZ. Whereas to me, there is something preceding that. I usually think that there's something else. Like the Pine Barrens in New Jersey is a good option. You know, they call it.
Yeah, see, that's a really dense, dark. Mm-hmm. It's very mysterious still. It's very, very wild to us still. We don't venture into it frequently.
And that there is something that people see out there that creates the fear of the swamp that is then propagated by pop culture and other things as well. So that's where we differ. You're very logical. You know, the beginning starts where I can see it. And I say that the beginning starts a few steps back. And so that's why you can tell me all you want about swamps. I don't like them. I don't want them. I know that they're necessary and I think we should protect them. But to me, the idea that the swamp is a feared thing comes from a fearsome thing in our collective psyches, and I don't know what it is, but that's probably where, you know, dragons lived and stuff. I don't know.
I mean, not dragons, I think they're the werewolves. Boogeyman because they have to be,
right?
I mean, all the ghost stories because they are dangerous places, and I think they have to be.
Yeah.
And I think we have to spin that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, and I think they are because there's actually ghosts in there.
See, so there you go. Fresh
that's
take
why
from
we're
Sam.
Different.
Fresh
that's,
take.
That's the difference I was trying to point out there. Good.
So I guess we get down to business. Anything else that we need to talk about today, Sam? On number 50 here.
On number 50. Well, you know, just make the announcement that we're here and you need to deal with that. You need to come to terms with that. We're not leaving, so good luck. Beyond that,
you could just not download us anymore. That would fix it.
Don't even what? That's a terrible way.
Did I say things?
Beyond that, it looks like we didn't get any new patrons this week. That's fine. You can go to patreon.com/notalonepodcast if you want to learn more about how to sponsor and support your favorite show, as well as get early access to the episodes, ad-free versions of the episodes, some bonus episodes that we do from time to time. But we did get a few different iTunes reviews.
Yes.
So we want to thank Raider, W-R-A-D-E-R. Raider. We want to thank Raider.
Yeah, Raider.
We want to thank Snowpenny.
Legendary.
We want to thank Snowpenny. We want to thank Casual Chess, who is the one who says that our unrelated banter and crosstalk is a characteristic of the program and not a one-off. So, but he still gave us 3 stars. So
yeah, I'm still fine with that.
I'm fine with it.
That's cool.
And then we'd like to thank Nefer Kitty. That's great. Nefer Kitty 8402, and we're going to read that one here. It says, hilarity sues when these two are together. I'm going to start off by saying that I switched from Android to iPhone strictly to leave them a review. If that's the case,
oh my goodness,
we both deserve a raise. I'm cutting that out, but that is amazing.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Anywho, it says,
wow.
You guys are so awesome. I love how much research and time you put into every episode, how knowledgeable I end up being just for listening to you guys. Keep it up, and hopefully one day y'all can have your own show too. Greetings from Garland, Texas. Thank you so much for your support there. That's a very nice. I like that message a lot. You can go to iTunes, leave us a review. We love that. We read one out at the end of the show usually, just as a way of saying thanks for leaving them. What else? We're going to be back next week with, I guess, a 1-year special, which is just going to be just a normal episode. And
we're going to talk about it.
We're going to talk about it. We'll figure it out. I don't know what we're going to do yet. I have an idea. I had this list of topics to do in 2018, and I was like holding back the gates on cracking them open. Now I feel like we're finally into 2018, that we can actually do it. So we'll be getting into that. I've got a good idea of what I'd like to do, but we'll talk about it. Anyway, we'll be back next week. You can find me at Not Alone Pod on Twitter. That's our show account. That's also, I just use it as my personal account. Jason, where can the people find you?
At Mighty Moit.
Mighty Moit. You can also find us on Facebook at Not Alone Podcast, Instagram at Not Alone Podcast. You can join our Facebook community, our Facebook group of people who are there. It's called Remember...
All the very best people.
All the very best people that we have. It's called Remember You Are Not Alone, a community... Or We Are Not Alone, a community for the strange. And that's on Facebook. You can go to notalonepodcast.com to find blog posts with further information and stuff like that about every episode. You can Google us, which is what Jason always likes to say. And there's one. Oh, yeah. You can reach out at notalonepodcast@gmail.com. Tell us what you think. Tell us if you have any ideas. Yeah, that's it. We exist. We're here.
And we continue to be.
So I did it last week.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, which is
man,
fitting.
Man, I feel like I get all of this. I love it.
I know, right? All right. Jason's going to do it this week.
So remember, whether you're tracking down this heap of swamp monster or accidentally lighting some methane on fire, you are not alone.